This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on significant geopolitical developments in 2024. The participants are Ashok Sajjanhar, former ambassador, and Kalol Bhattacharji, journalist.
Good evening and welcome to the Current Affairs program on Akashvani. This evening we have with us a distinguished panel led by Ambassador Ashok Sajjanhar, as well as Prasar Bharati's special correspondents in Dhaka and Dubai. In Dhaka, we have Naval, and in Dubai, we have Vinod Kumar. Both the special correspondents have extensively reported about the region, and it will be an enlightening experience for all of us to hear from them. 2024 has been a very significant year, both globally as well as for the neighborhood of India. In the world that we saw, some of the biggest fightings that took place in Gaza Strip, and then the escalation in the West Asian conflict took place, and the conflict spread to Lebanon as well as to Syria, ultimately leading to the toppling of the Assad government in Syria. Near home in Bangladesh, on August 5, we saw the toppling of the government of Sheikh Hasina. To give us a sense of the developments that took place in 2024 and the way the year ahead is expected to shape out, we have with us Ambassador Ashok Sajjanhar. I would ask Ambassador Sajjanhar to tell us what his experience is of 2024 and what are we expecting in the months ahead in 2025. Ambassador Sajjanhar.
You have mentioned about some of the challenges that Indian foreign policy, some of the headwinds that Indian foreign policy has encountered in 2024. And one of them you have mentioned is the developments in Bangladesh. Of course, they came as quite a surprise. But if you permit, before I go to that, I would also like to mention that Indian foreign policy has registered a large number of successes also in 2024, whether it is in terms of deepening and expansion of our relations with the United States, the visit by Prime Minister Modi to the United States in September last year, when he went there for a bilateral visit to the residence of President Joe Biden in Wilmington, Delaware, also where the sixth meeting of the Quad, the summit, that also took place. In addition to that, Prime Minister Modi's visits to Russia on two occasions, one as a bilateral standalone summit in July, the second one in October, when he went to Kazan for the BRICS summit. I will not call it the normalizations of relations with China, but the first tentative step towards a stabilization of ties with China. So I think there have been a number of positives also. But it would be useful, as you have mentioned, to discuss these two and maybe a couple of more issues which could prove to be challenges, which could provide some wrinkles as far as our foreign policy is concerned. So first, coming to Bangladesh, Kalol, I think as you mentioned, it did come as a surprise, the rapidity with which the Sheikh Hasina government disintegrated and unfolded, because it did appear that she was very much in command in Bangladesh. I have been visiting Dhaka over the last few years, and on a couple of occasions attended also meetings at which Sheikh Hasina was there and the senior ministers were there. So I think she did appear to be quite in control. But we saw that there was one particular issue in terms of reservation, and this was the anti-quota stir that took place. But of course, it was not done as a result of any executive decision by Sheikh Hasina or her government, but it was brought into play as a result of a decision by the High Court of Bangladesh. But, not going into details, she was dislodged. She had to flee suddenly to India, and she has taken refuge in India at the moment. Our relations between India and Bangladesh, which had been rising very steadily over the last 15 years in every field, whether it is trade, whether it is economy, whether it is commerce, or it is in terms of the securities, Sheikh Hasina had taken very strong and decisive action against the separatist elements who were operating from Bangladesh in India. Many of the insurgent elements, she had taken action on that. Even in terms of the illegal migration, there was some control. In terms of border management, there was control. So I think there was a great deal of comfort level between India and Bangladesh during the 15 years. But since October 5, and we saw that the former Nobel Peace Laureate, Dr. Muhammad Yunus, he was brought to the helm of affairs. He was made the chief advisor. So the head of the caretaker government, incidentally, for which there is no provision in the constitution of Bangladesh. So he was made the chief of the interim government in Bangladesh. And the sort of measures that have been taken by the Muhammad Yunus dispensation, they have not been helpful at all as far as relations with India are concerned. They have, in fact, many of them have found to be very provocative. As far as actions against by the Islamists and the jihadists against the minority, particularly the Hindu minorities, in terms of attacks on their temples, attacks on their workplaces, attacks on their families and individuals, that has taken place, and this has created considerable concern and anxiety as far as India is concerned. Bangladesh has also allowed relations with Pakistan to prosper, and also for Pakistan army personnel also to be posted in Bangladesh. So there has been considerable anxiety. We had the visit of our foreign secretary. That was a very judicious move. India has displayed strategic patience. We sent our foreign secretary Vikram Misri to Bangladesh, to Dhaka. And he made it very clear that India wants to have very positive, very friendly, very cordial, and very productive relations with Bangladesh. But he also sent out this message that action should be taken against those who are acting against the Hindu minority and other minorities. And of course, there should be assurance of keeping India's sensitivities in mind and ensuring not doing anything against the security of India. So that is where the matter rests, Kalol, as far as Bangladesh is concerned. And we do sincerely hope that the Bangladesh government will act in a prudent and judicious manner to have positive relations with India.
Thank you, Ambassador Sachinha. In fact, I also had the opportunity to travel in Bangladesh in the last few months and saw myself how the law and order situation has absolutely broken down, with the policing service primarily suffering from an absolute lack of credibility among the people. But to get to the latest that is happening in the country, we would like to move to Naval from Dhaka. If Naval could tell us what are the latest that is really unfolding in Dhaka, because on 31st December 2024, the students and the uprising leaders of the student coordination movement, it's called the Anti-Discrimination Students Movement, they had threatened to take out a rally and come out with a July proclamation, which was expected to bury the 1972 constitution. That was somehow averted at the last minute, and the government, that is the interim government, has promised to bring out its own July proclamation sometime in January. So all these changes may actually challenge the constitution of Bangladesh, upon which the country now stands. To get to the latest that is happening in Bangladesh and its streets, I would turn to Naval from Dhaka. Naval, please tell us, what are your impressions from Dhaka about the situations that are currently unfolding in Bangladesh?
On 31st December, there was a planned gathering, Unity March, at the Central Shahid Minar in Dhaka. And the aim of that march was to pressurize government for the July proclamation. But somehow they changed their objective and they named it a Unity March. The demand was for the July proclamations. It means the nullification or the do away with the constitution of Bangladesh, which is 1972 constitution. And that means the revolutionary kind of government would be formed, and that was their demand. But there is a division in the political parties, Islamic Party and Bangladesh Nationalist Party. Islamic Party like Jamaat-e-Islami and the student organization who are behind the student protest and that toppled the Sheikh Hasina government on 5th August and the Jamaat-e-Islami. They are planning to bring out a July proclamation and the revolutionary government. So the constitution will be null and void. But the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, at the same time, they are resisting the move. They are of the view that if the July proclamation bring out in a way the students are demanding, that will lead to the Khilafat kind of thing in Bangladesh. And they are against, they want early election as soon as possible in Bangladesh, Bangladesh Nationalist Party and other democratic political party in Bangladesh. So that is the situation here on ground. And in coming days, the government, what is the interim government led by Professor Mohammad Yunus, will bring in next 1 or 2 weeks, it will be known.
Thank you, Dhaval. The West Asian region, which has witnessed really tremendous developments in the last 1 year or so, especially starting with the October 7 attack on Israel by Hamas. Before that, turn to hear about what our External Affairs Minister had to say at the United Nations General Assembly about the conflicts that are currently raging in the world, most importantly, Gaza and Ukraine.
I congratulate the President of the General Assembly, His Excellency Mr. Philemon Yang, and strongly support the 79th UN General Assembly's theme of leaving no one behind. Madam President, we are gathered here at a difficult time. The world is yet to recover from the ravages of the COVID pandemic. A war in Ukraine is well into its third year. The conflict in Gaza is acquiring wider ramifications. Across the global south, development plans have gone off rails and SDG targets are receding.
So we heard what the External Affairs Minister of India had to say at the United Nations General Assembly. Ambassador Sajjanhar, I want to ask you, why did the world fail to stop the Gaza crisis during 2024? And we witnessed how the crisis then escalated and spread to first Lebanon, then it went into Syria, and then became kind of a shooting war between Iran and Israel. And for several months of the year, we had this conflict and tension and hostilities between Iran and Israel that we witnessed. In this context, the question is, why hasn't any of the peace formulas that were floated during this time, the backroom channel negotiations between Israelis and the Lebanese, as well as Hamas and Israeli leadership, why haven't these attempts succeeded, Ambassador Sajjanhar?
The first thing I think is that when Hamas would have decided, either with total knowledge or not full knowledge of Iran, I don't know whether they would have expected that there would be such an emphatic and such a decisive response by Israel. First of all, they would have thought that there would be some response which they would be able to bear, which they would be able to take on their body politic. And after that, there would be so much, if Israel went beyond a point, there would be so much of an uproar globally, internationally, and there would be so much of an uproar as far as the Arab countries are concerned, that Israel would not be allowed to continue on that path. That, unfortunately, has not happened. Israel has continued over the last more than 1 year, 7th October 2023, it all started. So it is now well into 1 year, 3 months, so to say. And still, there doesn't seem to be any end to that. And of course, there have been all these resolutions at the United Nations. There have been case has been taken up at the ICC, which has pronounced Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, and also the former Defense Minister as criminals, as war criminals, and charged them with committing genocide there. But none of this has been able to stop the hands of the Israeli government. So I think this is a total failure of multilateralism. This is a total failure of the UN Security Council, where they have really not been able to adopt resolutions which can force Israel to stop, or at least, as you mentioned, some sort of a negotiation between Israel and Hamas, the release of the hostages that were taken, because still there apparently are about 100 hostages unaccounted for. Out of them, it is reported that about 40 might have been killed and 60 are still in the custody of Hamas. And after that, I think what has happened is, in addition to what Israel has been able to do to Hamas and also take out Hamas leaders, like the leader of Hamas who was in Iran, who was participating in the inauguration ceremony of the Iranian president. When he was an official guest of Iran, he was taken out from there. The Hezbollah leader, Nasrallah, who was apparently having a meeting six floors below the surface of the ground, he was taken out. There were all these pager attacks that were committed. So I think what Israel seemed to have lost, that it was a formidable and an invincible power in that region, that had suffered a huge dent as a result of what happened on the 7th of October last year. But it has been able to redeem a little bit of that. So I would imagine that the United States, which is the only country which can apply pressure on Israel to stop acting in a certain manner, it has not done so because of its own domestic considerations, domestic reasons, the power of the Jewish lobby as far as the United States is concerned, and also the total failure of the multilateral system and the UN Security Council, which does not represent the realities of today. This is something that India has been speaking about. And I think Israel has been able to completely decimate Hamas. Hezbollah also has resulted in a very significant decline in the influence and power and the clout and profile of Iran. And we can see that happening also in Syria. So I think there are a number of reasons for this, but everyone is now waiting as to what happens when Mr. Trump takes over in another 17 days or so. But we know that Mr. Trump was the one who had initiated the Abraham Accords when he was in his first term as president. And he is extremely very supportive of Israel. And so we'll really have to wait and see as to what happens once Mr. Trump takes over on the 20th of January.
From our point of view, what really appears to me to be of great significance is that the Syrian battlefront has opened up, and a large number of these prisoners who were held in these jails of Assad regime have been freed. And the problem is that these so-called terrorists or even have not been freed through a judicial process. They have just been freed without any trial, without any verification of their intention about what they plan to do in near future. So my concern from the Indian point of view, especially as India has been a victim of international terrorism, is that if Syria becomes a hotbed of international terrorism because of the presence of these thousands of European and other sorts of radicals and extremists and terrorists, then because of that presence being there, they could actually pose significant threat to democracies and open societies like India. It's one of the largest economies right now, which is booming, and we have significant stakes here, and therefore we have to keep watching Syria. For a moment, we'd move to our Prasar Bharati's special correspondent, Vinod, in Dubai. Vinod, you watch the region from the Gulf to Israel, Palestine, Syria, as well as Iran. I would ask you, what has been your experience? What does your diary tell you as you look back at 2024? What are the events that have a bearing on India's prospects in 2025? Please tell us, Vinod.
There are, of course, many positives for India when it comes to our West Asian story narrative. Let me begin with our relation with the UAE. Earlier in the year 2024, India and UAE signed a new bilateral investment treaty, replacing the previous one. This treaty is aimed at balancing investor protections with a state regulatory autonomy, and this also signals India's commitment with the deepening ties with UAE. Our Prime Minister has visited multiple times in 2023 and 2024. And UAE also had committed $2 billion for a food processing facility in Gujarat, India. A couple of months back, the UAE Crown Prince from Abu Dhabi had visited India, and we have signed a civil nuclear cooperation agreement. And an important aspect from a cultural viewpoint is that the Bab Hindu Temple, which was inaugurated by the Prime Minister in UAE last year, is one of the largest stone temples anywhere in the West Asia. It's a temple in the Muslim world. It speaks volumes. And speaking about other countries other than UAE, a major $278 billion deal was signed between India's Petronet and Qatar Energy, extending a 25-year contract of LNG. This shows India's really important stand on India's energy partnership with the Middle East. Prime Minister also visited Qatar in February 2024. It was hailed as a diplomatic victory when 8 Indian former naval personnel, which was detained by Qatar, was released after his visit. A couple of weeks back, Prime Minister visited Kuwait. This was a visit after 43 years. The last Prime Minister to visit Kuwait was Indira Gandhi. And on the trade front, GCC has become India's largest regional trading bloc partner, almost comprising of 16% of India's trade and surpassed European Union. And military cooperation have increased, which includes naval and air exercises, including India, UAE, France. This happens on a regular basis. And when it comes to Saudi's Vision 2030, closely aligns with India's vision of Vikas Pith Bharat of 2047, where we are diversifying our energy sectors from fossil fuel-based economies to renewable sources, focus on AI technology and multiple other fronts. Then the major things that is of 2024 is the regional conflicts that is very elaborately presented by our ambassador. And this conflict in Gaza, which began in 2023, continued to dominate this regional dynamic. India has an important trade corridor, which was announced in G20. It's called the India-Middle East Economic Corridor. This current situation in Gaza and the wider West Asia, which includes Lebanon, Golan Heights, and Syria, this is a bit complicating India's prospects of this establishing a fully functional IMEC in this region. And in the Red Sea, we have got these Houthi attacks, Gulf of Aden. This trade corridor is bottlenecked by these Iran-backed proxies in Yemen. And India has taken decisive military action to contain this. These are the major developments of that's of India's interest. And the latest one, the fourth strategic dialogue between India and UAE happened in last December. And with certain countries in this region, India's relationship is thriving. But definitely, we have got challenges which not only affects India, but the entire region and the global economy itself.
Thank you so much, Vinod. I must add here for our listeners that today, India is actually hosting the Deputy Foreign Minister of Iran, Takht Ravanchi, who is leading a high-level delegation of Iranian officials and diplomats who have probably by now just concluded the Foreign Office consultations with their counterpart from the Ministry of External Affairs. And both sides are discussing many things and obviously assessing the state of the bilateral relation between Tehran and New Delhi, especially in the context of the upcoming Trump presidency in the United States. Well, one of the most important developments in 2024 was the U.S. presidential election. The U.S. presidential election, obviously, is a democratic process. There is nothing supposed to be surprising about it. But then, of course, it was the re-election of President Donald Trump that the world witnessed. It was a very exciting and at times violent, divisive campaign and very dramatic footages of President Trump himself getting wounded by a sniper. So the election was absolutely stunning. And also it had an Indian angle because of the presence of presidential candidate from the Democratic Party, Kamala Harris. But unfortunately, Kamala Harris lost the election and it is the Trump presidency too that we are staring at. So for a moment, let us now listen to what President Trump had to say after winning the election in the United States.
These are our friends. We have thousands of friends on this incredible movement. This was a movement like nobody's ever seen before. And frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country and maybe beyond. And now it's going to reach a new level of importance because we're going to help our country heal.
For a moment now, we are going to move to the Ukraine theater because this particular theater also saw some Indian initiative for peace and the Prime Minister of India, Prime Minister Modi, met Russian President Vladimir Putin as well as President Zelensky of Ukraine during this year and there were initiatives for talks and dialogue. And I would urge our listeners to take a pause for a moment and listen to what the Prime Minister of India had to say during his visit to Poland.
Ukraine aur Paschim Asia mein chal rahe sangharsh hum sabhi ke liye gehri chinta ka vishay hai. Kisi bhi samasya ka samadhan ranbhumi mein nahi ho sakta. Hum shanti aur sthirta ki जल्द से जल्द बहाली के लिए डायलॉग और डिप्लोमेसी का समर्थन करते हैं.
Ambassador Sajjan, I want to come to you and ask, India has tried to stop the war, obviously, and many other countries have been asking for it. But then the war in Ukraine continues and we have an incoming administration in the United States. There is a lot of expectation that President Trump is going to put an end to this war, which has already taken lives of soldiers of Russia as well as Ukraine. In this context, what are your expectations, Ambassador Sajjanhar? What do you think? Would President Trump be able to stop this bloodletting in Ukrainian battlefield?
Yes, thank you, Kalol, for that question. President Trump had, you know, during his campaign, he had mentioned that he will stop that conflict on the first day that he takes over as the president of the United States. Now, that seems to be a tall order, but I think it is the conflict which is that it is well into its third year and there is a fatigue that is setting in, whether it is the Ukrainian effort is concerned or even as far as Russia is concerned, because Russia has also suffered grievously as a result of this conflict in terms of the damage to its infrastructure and to the losses that it has suffered, and also the fact that economically the very lucrative markets of Europe and many other countries, they have been completely cut out of those markets. So I think there is a stalemate, there is a fatigue. Russia is making advances and President Trump has said that he is not going to indefinitely continue to support the Ukraine war effort. He in fact has said that he is not going to support this war effort. The countries themselves must look after, they must put at least 2% of the GDP into their defense expenditure. And he's been talking with President Zelensky, also sending out these messages. President Zelensky has also said that he would be prepared. He's even as far as the 20% of the Ukrainian territory that has been occupied by Russia. He said the final decision, it could be taken later. Right now, there could be a ceasefire or something of that sort. There are some conditions that security guarantees should be provided to Ukraine or should be made a member of NATO. So I think there are all these aspects. And as you said very rightly, Prime Minister Modi has met President Putin twice during this, over the last few months. He's met President Zelensky three times. So I think there are some good possibilities. It's all moving towards some sort of a ceasefire on the Ukrainian war front.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Sajjanhar. So we had a very challenging year in 2024. A lot of these conflicts that started in 2022 and 23 intensified, escalated, spilled over. And also then we saw some of these most stunning regional developments, especially in Bangladesh, which will remain a challenging area for India, even for the year ahead. So I thank you, Ambassador Sajjanhar, and our Prasar Bharati special correspondents, Naval in Dhaka and Vinod in Dubai. And we hope to continue this discussion because 2025 appears to be poised to be extremely challenging and exciting as far as news cycles are concerned. And we will be following all the developments in the region as well as in the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Kalol. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You were listening to a discussion on significant geopolitical developments in 2024. The participants were Ashok Sajjanhar, former ambassador, and Kalol Bhattacharji, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashwani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnstalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.